Hi, I'm Courtney Vian with the Journal of Accountancy podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Peter Margaritis, a speaker and author of the book Improv is No Joke, Using Improvisation to Create Positive Results in Leadership and Life. Peter is a CPA who goes by the nickname The Accidental Accountant, and he has delivered over 500 presentations at events given by BISCPA, state CPA societies, and major accounting firms. He's also served as the chair of the Ohio Society of CPAs. He also has a podcast called Improv is No Joke, in which he interviews CPAs and other business leaders, and you can find it on iTunes. So one of his favorite topics is how you can use improv skills to become a better leader and a better public speaker, and that's what we're going to be talking to him about today. So hello, Peter.
Hi. Thank you, Courtney.
So first, tell me a little bit about the name, The Accidental Accountant.
I didn't get into this profession until I was 30 years old. I went and got my master's degree in accountancy from Case Western Reserve, passed the exam, went to work for Pricewaterhouse, and then I took a job some years after that at Victoria's Secret Catalog. And during a performance review, my boss at the time uttered these words during my review: "How in the heck did you ever become a CPA? CPAs can get down into all that detail. I can only get you about halfway into the detail. You're an accidental accountant." And I looked at him with this great big smile, and I said, "Thank you so very much. I'm actually going to name my business one day after that, and I'm going to have it trademarked."
How did you get into improv? That sounds like an unusual choice of hobby for an accountant.
I was actually doing stand-up comedy at the time, and one of the guys who was doing it at the same time said, "Pete, you might like improv comedy. I do a workshop on Tuesday nights. Why don't you come and join us?" And man, I was hooked after really my first time doing it. It is so much different than stand-up comedy that I realized immediately. But then I had this huge aha moment early on in this improv that it's more than just being funny. It's more than just making jokes or whatever. The skills, the principles of improvisation are the same skills we use in leadership and life. And that just set me on a path of becoming a student of improv, learning as much as I can about it, performing it when I get the opportunity, attending workshops at Second City, ultimately writing a book and created a life and business style around it.
You say the principles of improv have helped you in your career. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. The principles of improv start with these two words. These are, and I call them, the most powerful words in the English language: yes, and. Yes, and is all about agreement, but not always agreeing. Yes, and moves conversations forward in a positive direction. When you say no because or yes but to somebody else, the words no and because create a defense, make somebody defensive. I actually can increase emotion. And when you get emotion involved in a conversation, it can be hijacked in almost a second. So by using yes and, you're actually exploring someone's ideas, someone's thoughts, or understanding the position that they're coming from and responding back to them and pushing things forward in a positive direction. And you know what? You may come to the conversation thinking this is the way I want to have this done, but through this yes and conversation, you might realize maybe the other person has a better idea to get it done quicker. So it fosters that ability to listen to another individual, listen to their ideas so that they are heard. Now, listen. This is listening to understand, not listening to respond. We live in a very listen-to-respond environment where we're not letting people finish what they say. We're doing a lot of interrupting. Or we are pretending like we're listening to them, and in our mind, we're sitting there thinking, "Would you just hurry up and finish what you're saying? Come on, would you just hurry up and finish? Because I got something profound to say that's going to change everything." And with that self-talk going on in our head, we haven't heard a word the other person has said. Now, listening to understand is whatever agenda, whatever thought that we have, strong feeling about, set it aside. And then completely listen to the conversation that the person is having with you. That listening with the focus, with that undivided attention.
Now you brought up the inner critic. Could you talk about some ways that you could silence that inner voice?
The inner critic is there for a reason, to help you be safe. And to tell you some things, sometimes, you know, they might be a little bit too overprotective, but I want to be told no in situations that it's going to risk my life. So like if I'm going to go skydiving and I'm standing on a plane looking out and I'm about ready to jump, I want that inner critic in my head to go, Pete, don't jump because you have no parachute. And they say skydiving without a parachute is a once in a lifetime event. That's when I want that inner critic right there to say, no, 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 no. However, in other instances, I don't want that inner critic there. I want to silence it because if we don't take risks, we don't grow. And a lot of times that inner critic wants to silence us from taking any type of risk. Notice that as I have used these principles of improvisation, I allow myself to be able to silence the inner critic, take the risk, and understand failure is okay because failure is a learning opportunity. Public speaking is one of the biggest fears people have. And that inner critic in your head will be telling you all the negative things in the world, why you should not get up there and do it, or how you're going to fail, or whatever. So if we tie this back into improvisation, in order to silence that inner critic, if you use the terms, yes, and I will be successful, yes, and I can do this, yes, and most people in this room will never get up and do this, I'm doing this, this is something huge, and you turn that into positive self-talk, and you can continually use that positive self-talk that you will survive, even if you make a mistake, it's all going to be good because the audience is rooting for you. That's the biggest way of silencing that inner critic, is with positive self-talk and the use of the two power words of yes and and.
So a lot of people fear public speaking. What are some ways that they could cope with that anxiety?
People have a fear for a lot of reasons. But I tell you what, if you want to be a leader, then you have to get past that fear. If you want to grow in your career, you've got to get past that fear. And part of the ways of getting past that fear is preparation, not perfection, but preparation. You have to be able to know your topic inside and out, upside and down. You have to have that base knowledge. That helps with reducing that fear. However, I do want to say this. I've done over 500 plus presentations. I've spoken so many times, but every time I get in front of a group, I still have a case of the nerves. But the thing that I've learned how to do is to manage those nerves. Actually, I want those nerves because it tells me that I'm ready. If I walk in and I don't have a case of the nerves, that means I'm complacent and I'm going to fall flat on my face.
Often CPAs have to present a lot of technical and financial information, and sometimes they worry that it's going to be very dry. What are ways that you could engage your audience even when you're presenting a lot of highly technical information?
Let me just start with a quote from a woman by the name of Brené Brown, who did a TEDx presentation in Houston in 2010. And one of my favorite quotes from her are, "Stories are just data with a soul." There's a story behind everything. The more that you can eliminate the amount of data that you have on your slide, that you have in your presentation, and you can tell a story around why this number did what, and what caused this. Maybe it was one of the people in your firm or within your company that landed a big client, or maybe it was somebody within your organization that came up with a more streamlined approach that saved the company $750,000. That's what gets people excited. That's what keeps people engaged. It's the emotion of it. But data is just boring. Stories add color. another way of engaging the audience is asking a lot of questions, getting their thoughts. There's polling questions. How many of you are from, you know, in public accounting, if you got a seminar, how many of you are from business and industry, or how many of you ever run into this situation? What did you do? And turn it and put it on them. Get from behind the podium and remove that barrier from that audience and use eye contact to connect and ask questions. Tell stories. That's how you engage an audience, not with data.
Now, when you speak, do you tend to walk around or do you tend to stay more behind the podium?
I like to walk around, and depends on the room, the way the room is set up. And I'll just take this moment to say, moving forward, the best way to set up a room for any type of presentation, any type of learning, is not in a classroom style. It's with round tables where those who are attending can converse, especially if you ask them to do an exercise or anything along those lines, versus a classroom style makes it feel like to the audience that I'm back in college and that person's the speaking head and I'm not supposed to say anything. I don't subscribe to that. I want my audience to talk. And I do it by walking the room. I do it by conversation. I do it by eye contact. I do it by anybody want to volunteer to do this or what do you think? Or I don't call out people. I want them to, I try to set the atmosphere that I want them to respond versus me going, okay, Courtney, what do you think? I want it to be more of a collaborative environment and more of a 360 type of a role, because you know what? I know I do not know everything. And I've learned a lot from my audience in this 360 environment. And that's how I go into any type of speaking engagement I have. This is a conversation I want with you, not a presentation. As it relates to public speaking, go look at your PowerPoint slides. If you've got more than three bullets on a slide, put them on three separate slides. If you've got five or six bullets on a slide, look for the top three. Get rid of the rest. Talk about those. Go find the story. And in this, I call it financial storytelling. In this financial storytelling, think about where the impact words are. And I'll use this as an example. Say you're a CFO delivering the quarterly briefing to the entire organization, and you go, our revenue, we had an 80% increase in our revenue this past year. I go, so where's the impact word there? Well, it's the 80%. Well, why are you burying that in the middle of your sentence? That's like a comic putting a punchline in the middle of a joke. You want to leave that audience for a brief pause at the end with the impact words. So they say, over the last 2 years, our revenue has grown by 80%. And stop for a moment and pause. Now, what you have to do is tell the story on why. And this will require you to get out from behind your desk and go figure out why it increased by 80%. Maybe somebody landed a brand new client. We have a new product that came out that contributed to it. Revenue went up by 80% because our top salesperson, Courtney, she landed this huge client that she's been after for 2 years, finally landed them, and they contributed half of that 80% increase in profit. And Courtney's out there. Now, Courtney, can you raise your hand? Let's everybody give a big applause to Courtney. Wow. You know what you've just done to Courtney? Yeah, man, you made her feel great. You've acknowledged it. You know what you made the organization? What did she do? How did she do that? They want to get more inquisitive. You've just created that emotion. It's so simple, but it's so hard. But that does a lot with these presentations. It makes that emotional connection with that audience. Now, never go, our revenues went down by 80% because Courtney lost a big client this year. All right, Courtney, why don't you raise your hand out there? No, we don't. That's the opposite approach. We don't want to do that. We only want to do it when it's a positive. When it's a negative, you take it back on the organization. It's like a great coach. A great coach, a great leader gives praise to his team, but when they fail, he takes or she takes the arrow. Revenues were off by 80% this year. And quite frankly, a lot of it had to do with the economy. As we can all see, we've lost some clients, but the management team is working very hard to try to right this ship. Please bear with us. When we're up there delivering information, we want somebody to act upon it. And if we're not providing that vessel for them to do it, my question is, why are we doing it? Why are we just out up there spewing? We want people to act on what we're saying. So let's find better ways of doing it other than jam-packed PowerPoint presentations. Find stories. That's where the magic is.
I want to thank you, Peter, for speaking with us today. I've learned a lot. This has been Courtney Vian for the Journal of Accountancy podcast, and thank you for listening.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.